fresh back from San Diego, where I was at the UFO conference and webcast. Had a great time there. First time in San Diego at a conference. I'm going to be down there again in June with our affiliate Kogo. But just had a great time talking to everybody there. And the guests, Roger Lear was there, Jose Escamilla, so many others, talking about their work in the UFO field. And well done. But it was also webcasted to hundreds and hundreds of people. And they were able to ask us questions via computer. So that was pretty novel. First time experiencing that. And it works. The technology is truly amazing. Of course, I started by this little story that I carry with me about three individuals who died and went up to heaven. And St. Peter met him at the gates and says, "Folks, I am booked to the gills. I'm not letting anybody in unless you died in a very strange way. If it was a strange death, I'll let you in." So he went to the first person and said, "So how did you die?" And he said, "Well, I have to be very honest with you, St. Peter. I've been married for 22 years, and things are a little rocky. And I just felt that my wife wasn't faithful to me anymore. So I left work early, and I went home to my apartment. We live on the 21st floor of a high rise. And I was going to confront her because I knew something was going on. And so I burst into the apartment, and there she was in the bedroom by herself. But I just didn't believe it. I went all over the place. I looked everywhere. I couldn't find anyone. And I felt kind of embarrassed, honestly. So I went outside on the balcony just to kind of get my breath. And I looked down, and on the ledge, St. Peter, was somebody holding on. His fingers were on the ledge. He was dangling there. I couldn't believe it. He was screaming. I caught him. I'm smashing his fingers with my fist. I'm trying to let him to let go. He wouldn't let go. I went back into my apartment. I came out with a hammer. I'm smashing his fingers. He wouldn't let go. And I just kept hitting him and hitting him. And finally, his fingers got so sore from, I guess, the hammer hitting his nails that he let go. And he fell 21 floors, St. Peter, all the way down. And I figured I had him. But he landed in a bush. And so I went, "Jeez." So I did the next thing I could. I went to the kitchen, got the refrigerator, wheeled it out, pushed it over the ledge, and it landed on him and killed him. And I died of a heart attack in the process. St. Peter said to me, "My gosh, that's quite a story, quite a way to die. Come on in." So he went up to the second guy and he said, "How did you die? You know, things are tight. I can't let you in unless it was an unusual death." He said, "Well, St. Peter, I live on the 22nd floor of a high-rise apartment, and I was out there on the balcony doing my exercises, and a 70-mile-an-hour wind came by, blew me off. And I said, 'Oh, my God, I'm gone. I'm dead.' But I caught the edge of the balcony on the 21st floor, and I'm holding on, and I'm praying to God for someone to come and save me. And just as I did, some guy comes out of his apartment on that level, and I figure I'm saved, and I'm screaming. But what does he start doing? St. Peter, he starts hitting my fingers with his fists. I couldn't understand what was going on. He then goes back inside. He gets a hammer, and he starts hammering my fingers. I had to let go, and I fell 21 stories down. But, St. Peter, I landed in a bush, and I'm saying, 'My God, I'm saved.' And just then I looked up, and a refrigerator hit me, and I died." And St. Peter said, "Well, come on in." And he goes up to the third guy, and he said, "How did you die?" And he said, "St. Peter, picture this. I'm hiding in a refrigerator." Back with you on Coast to Coast, open lines. Let's go to California. Patrick, first-time caller. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, George.
Go ahead.
I kind of I'm very glad to get on the line here. I'm a little, nervous because I feel like I don't have much time. But your show has been extremely educational the last few months when I got introduced to you. It happened to be on a night you were talking about UFOs, and I had wanted to ask you about UFOs, not knowing how much time I got.
Go ahead.
A while back, okay, great. A while back, the girl that introduced me to you, I had met her on the CB. She told me about this colloidal silver stuff to help me with the AIDS. Anyway, listening to you, I told her a story about my life in the past. And she had told me to listen to the station because we were going to talk about the homegrown terrorist bill that was going to be passed that particular night and was going to be talked about on your show. So later on in the evening, I'm telling her this stuff about my past and UFOs in my past that I've seen a few, totally believe it, and not knowing where this particular thing fits in, possibly with the UFO thing, as far as government involvement in looking at the people in this country and studying them. This thing with the wire behind the ear, okay, I was in a psych ward, and lots of them, actually, but I had this memory.
How long were you in there?
How long was I in there?
Yeah.
George, to tell you the truth, this particular time where this memory was, I don't know.
It's all blanked out, isn't it?
Well, as far as everything around waking up on whatever I was laying on, whether it was a table or what, and the people in the room, the rest of it's blanked out. And particularly the night that I was listening to this, she told me to listen to your show. The moment I told her that about the wire behind the ear and other people I know I've talked to, usually people have done dope and they're blamed as being tweakers or out of their mind and all this, she tells me the guy that you had hosting your show that night, George, some or other, either him or the guy that he was talking to, had at the same moment told the story of the wire behind his ear, and that the Dr. Lear was able to get these out, do the regression and all that.
It's amazing, by the way, because on tomorrow night's program, the doctor who tried to take a object out of the behind the ear of Whitley Strieber is going to be on talking about this. Do you still have this in you?
I just mailed my letter to Dr. Lear's, the address that I got from this girl, just like 3 days ago.
Okay, and he will follow up with you on that. And, he'll review it. He's going to ask you to send him some x-rays, and then he'll get back to you. Let's go to Virginia. Brad, east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello, Brad. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
I have a very short story to tell you. You might get a kick out of it, and then I have a question.
Okay.
The short story is I'm a police officer, and I had arrested a gentleman one night and took him before the judge for his initial appearance. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. When I walked in the courtroom, I was kind of bummed because I was missing the show. When I walked in, to my surprise, the judge was sitting on the bench with Coast to Coast streaming over the internet.
I love it.
And that is a true story. So in between the initial appearance, we got to listen to Coast, and you would be surprised how many folks are out there protecting us every night. That really appreciate
it. And you know what? And also, Brad, we've got a huge prison population that listens to the program, too. So we've got law enforcement and the prisoners. Everyone's listening.
And that's my question. My question is, whether it be by climate change or whether it be by population changes, if and when the day comes where there are food and water shortages, what will the government do with the prison population?
That's a good question.
How will they justify starving these people or simply just releasing them out in the public to maybe reoffend, or maybe they've been rehabilitated?
Oh,
maybe they're that's a really tough question, but what would you do with roughly 2 million people?
What a paradox. Yeah, if they lose the services for whatever reason, something happens, a tragedy, some catastrophe. Good question. I mean, who goes first? That's the big issue.
I mean, do you go by social class? Do you go by income? You couldn't just lock the doors up and walk away, but what would you do?
See, I think, first of all, they're taking care of themselves. I think they're building these underground bunkers. They're ready in case something happens. I was asked that question yesterday in San Diego, and I think two things are going on. One is government needs to survive in the event of a disaster. So I don't have any problems with the fact that they have built some underground facilities. I think that's smart government. But on the other hand, they're also building them for themselves. And, you know, they'll be the first ones down there taking care of themselves. You bring up a very interesting situation, and that is who gets the services when things get tight? Here's an example. Water gets contaminated. So all we have left, let's say, is bottled water from companies that manufacture it. Who gets it? There's going to be a flood at the supermarkets, so they're not going to have any. Who do you dole it out to? How long can a human last, Brad, without water? 3 days?
Right.
That's what I've heard.
Roughly. And you're going to have a lot of illness and everything. There's going to be people drinking contaminated water sources because they're thirsty. So then you're going to have illness and disease spreading like crazy. You know, it's like your guests brought up some very valid points about the firearms and ammunition. You know, even in the police departments, there's 4 to 6 weeks waiting list just to get ammunition to qualify for the police departments. I mean, it's hitting everywhere.
Absolutely.
And that's another question. I mean, who gets the ammunition? Does the military get it? Does law enforcement get it? Do private citizens get it? And it goes along the same lines. It's someone's going to have to make a decision of who's going to survive and who's going to be the first to go without.
Well, what's happening right now with ammunition is exactly the way you've said it. I think the military is getting it first right now. Law enforcement gets it second, if you can get it. And then the consumer, you know, he or she gets it third. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a shortage. They're making so much ammunition now for the military that even law enforcement and the consumer are having a difficult time finding it. Now, Mike, who called from Tacoma, Washington last hour, said he's having no trouble getting it. So he's got a supplier that has been very fortunate to get it.
He must. I'd like to know what he's paying for it, because it's about twice. It's
up 50% Absolutely. Get back to your first question. My take is, if there's such a calamity that those in the prison population, and they're probably groaning right now when they hear this, but I would guess that they'd be the last ones to get serviced with food and water.
Right. And if for anything, because of the demand by the public, because just for anything, because of the freedom of movement, because we're able to move to, say, if Washington's the only place to get ammo, everyone goes to Washington to get ammo. Well, the prison population cannot move to a certain place because that's the only place for fresh water. And obviously they can't pick those people up and just move them somewhere. But, you know, as a police officer, and there's a lot of police officers out there listening, you can't wish anything like that on anyone, regardless of the crime they've committed. If they've not committed a crime that society deems that they should lose their life for, how could you make that decision that the prison population is the last?
Yeah,
to get
it's
the
a
food and drink.
Horrible decision. All right, and say hi to the judge for me the next time you go in there.
I will do, George. Thank you for your show. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad. Next up, let's go to Peter in California on the wild card line. Peter, what's up?
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
I'm actually a first-time caller as well.
And it's super.
An absolute pleasure to talk to you. I listen to your show, and I get very educated listening to all your guests you have on there. But I have a theory as to what Bigfoot actually is.
Really?
How it came into existence.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Ezekiel, but it says that the angels found the daughters of man to be attractive and that they would come to earth and mate with them. And this gives legend to the men of renown through history. Now, Goliath, I believe, was one of these, and the term for them is called Nephilim.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay, and I really believe that Bigfoot is an inbred offshoot of this Nephilim that still retains a semi-human intelligence, and that is why he's able to, you know, evade and avoid mankind as long as he did. Because if you look at the history, you've got the Himalayas all the way to the Americas. You know, the indigenous people have all this lore about this very large, you know, ape-like, you know, walking erect humanoid or hominid, and you know, you got to think, well, you know, there's truth in legend. Okay.
You're on to something with this, Peter. I think you're very close.
And I think that over the years, you know, he lost a lot of humanistic qualities, and he's more animal-like,
yes.
But he still retains a human intelligence, and he's able to, you know, live off the land. He adapted. He grew more hair. I mean, you know, we've adapted, you know, physically to our environments. You have people that live in the cold that have a lower core body temperature of 2 or 3 degrees. So there, it makes sense that, you know, this being can exist. And, you know, it's just a really fascinating thing. What do you think?
And there probably aren't a lot of them, maybe a couple thousand on the planet.
I agree. Totally agree.
Which is another reason why we can't find one. But you know what? I've always believed that there were giants on this planet. We've had a number of guests on who talk about that. I think Goliath was one of them. And, you know, Bigfoot is always purported to be 7-8 feet tall.
Yeah.
It could be. You might be right.
You have people playing professional basketball well over 7 feet tall.
Absolutely. So you imagine an 8-foot Bigfoot?
Exactly. You know, it's no stretch of the imagination to have some type of, you know, semi-celestial human combination that, you know, is walking the earth today, because I think they're really old, too. I really do. And that's probably why there's not that many of them, and probably why you don't see a lot of juvenile-sized footprints. You see a lot of, you know, the full-size footprints like that, the adult size. Exactly.
Good theory, Peter. Next time I have a Bigfoot person on, I'll bring it up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next up, let's go to east of the Rockies, Lynn in Pennsylvania. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're up with us. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I called you about 4 or 5 weeks ago, but Doug Hutchison, did he ever come on? Did I miss him?
No, you haven't missed it yet. We were waiting for me to come back from St. Louis.
Right.
So we'll either squeeze him in the next 2 weeks. I've got to go to Detroit for a show. I'll be gone for 2 weeks after that. But then I'll be back again for a couple months in L.A. So if we don't get him soon, we'll get him sometime around June, July.
Okay, because you guys said 3 weeks, so I switched.
You don't want to miss him.
Well, I switched the shift with somebody on a Friday night, and I worked the 2 to 10 shift and went home, and I'm thinking, I don't know if he's going to be on. And then
have you followed his career?
Yeah, for about 10 years.
Great actor.
Yeah, he really
great
is.
Great actor.
All right, well, I'll just keep tuning in, and when I hear you're going to have him on, I'll try to get
okay,
in.
Good. Thanks,
right,
Lynn.
Thanks,
I'll give you full notice, too.
I will.
Do that.
All right, thank you. I know you will. Thank you.
Doug Hutchison, of course, played in a number of films and television shows, but the one I was talking about was The Green Mile, which is a great movie with Tom Hanks. Doug plays the part of Percy, the guard that nobody liked, if you remember that movie. And one day, he called into the program. And we're going to get him on. And he's also working on some stuff with vampires, which I want to talk with him about, which is really appropriate indeed. Hey, let me tell you, by the way, who our guest is tomorrow night. John Lermer. John is the surgeon who attempted to remove an implant from our very own Whitley Strieber. He got a little piece of it, but that's it. And Whitley is petrified. He doesn't want it taken out anymore. He's afraid what would happen. He doesn't want anybody digging around behind the side of his head by his ear. But we're going to talk with him also about his work with pre-death experiences, visions and hallucinations and all that. That's Dr. John Lermer. That's Monday night. We've got a great series of guests for you for the rest of the week. If you need to email me, that's George at coast2coastam.com. New website is up and running, but it's still going through its little metamorphosis. So just send us comments. And we'll keep making our changes, you know, fine-tuning. It works. I'll be back in a moment. If you're not a Streamlink member, by the way, you can do that for just pennies a day by going to coasttocoastam.com. Find out why so many people are podcasting and getting downloads for just pennies. And also this quote sent to me by Philip when during the World War II, Admiral Yamamoto said, "You cannot invade the mainland United States. There'd be a rifle behind every blade of grass." He was right. Back in a moment with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, good morning. Let's go right back to the calls. Let's go to Sacramento. Danny, west of the Rockies. Hello, Danny.
Hello, George. Hey, I'm a fifth-time caller and several years listener.
Thanks.
And I just wanted to ask, do you remember that show, The Greatest American Hero, which I wish they would make into a movie because, you know, it would be a record-breaking money earner and that movie phenomenon?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the people who have the encounters with UFOs that we, you know, I've heard on the radio on your show as well as you, you've heard, do they receive, have they ever noticed any superpowers that they've ever received from the UFO encounter? Or just a question.
Some of them get a little more intuitive, but I haven't really heard of superpowers.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, I kind of grew up on that show, The Greatest American Hero, and it just, I just thought it'd be kind of cool, you know.
Just to have superpowers.
Oh, yeah, you know, doesn't everybody.
Yeah, tell me about it. All right, thanks, Danny. Next up, let's go to Herb in Atlanta, first-time caller. Hello, Herb.
Hey, I want to take this opportunity to welcome the Nighthawk to the ATL.
Well,
how you doing, George?
It's great to be there. And how's your water supply these days?
Oh, you know, it's been raining pretty good. So, you know, we've been, the lakes have been rising.
Good.
Lake Altoona and Lake Lanier, they've been rising, the last thing I heard.
Lake Lanier was really low last year.
Yeah, they said something about they're supposed to be getting using some of this, quote-unquote, end-quote, bailout money for renovations and stuff like that.
And, well, you could use that, too. Well, see, that's how the money should be used.
I think so.
Yeah.
But I think they should send you and me some bailout money. That's what I think.
Let's all wait in line.
You've got a guest that comes on that I want to tip my hat to this lady. She just absolutely enthralls me when she starts talking about the Federal Reserve System, Linda Moulton Howe.
Oh, no, you're talking about Catherine Austin Fitz.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got him.
That's right. Linda's our reporter who comes on with great stories every month, but Catherine Austin Fitz is the person that we bring on to talk about economic matters.
Oh, okay. And she was the one I heard the other night.
Yeah. Well, now, on Thursday, you heard Linda Moulton Howe talking about the thermite in the World Trade Center, and she talked about crop formations and things like that. But Federal Reserve, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Okay, well, I just want everybody to know one thing. There is absolutely no way that we're going to erase 8 years of George W. Bush and his policies in this country. And I was talking to some guys on satellite radio about the Matrix Pyramid, and just to encapsulate it, at the top, you know, we got the Bilderberg Group, and then we got the CFR and the military industrial complex. And I told this guy, I said, guess who's on the bottom of the pyramid? And the guy said, well, who? I said, the politicians are. I basically was letting him know why the politicians are not able to do anything or not willing to do anything to help the American people. Because they're taking orders through the Matrix Pyramid down from the Bilderberg Group. And basically, they're just puppets. And let me say one more thing,
sure.
George. If I lived to be a million years old, I would never accept Barack Obama, a.k.a. Barry Sotoro, as the president of this country until he showed me a birth certificate.
Well, that seems to be the big problem right now, too. But I'll tell you, the one politician, if you want to call him that, that I think is the honest, most trusting one is Ron Paul. And there's got to be a place in high government for that guy. Let's go to Florida. Bobby, Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bobby.
Good morning, sir. Hi. I just had a quick, I know you're not a real believer in coincidence, which
no.
Neither am I. But I just had, you know, in my life, just weird stuff. Well, not weird, but I was born in 69. It's been happening in like 10-year increments. And in 79, I had an accident as a kid. Bad cut on my wrist, at the radial artery, almost bled to death. And then in 89, I had a car wreck. Seatbelt didn't lock, head went through the windshield, skull fracture, some pretty serious injuries, you know. And then in 99, another car wreck. I was hit by a drunk driver, which messed me up pretty bad for a year, a bunch of operations, therapy, and all that good stuff.
You're running out of lives, Bobby.
So now here it is, 99. It's 09. You know, I'm just wondering, is this little 10-year increment thing, you know, I'm not a big coincidence kind of person, but I'm just, wondering, you know.
How old are you?
I'm 40.
I don't know if you remember a movie called The Nine Lives of Elphego Baca.
No, sir.
It was an old Disney movie, and it was just about a guy who had nine lives. Called it Nine Lives Like a Cat. And yes. I wonder how many you've gone through.
Well, if you want to count my time when I was in the Army between Panama Canal Zone and Desert Storm, I'm sure I went through a few there along with the accident. I figure I've been through at least six.
So, be careful. You're still here, so you have at least one left. Let's keep it.
I hope so.
Let's keep it. All right, be safe.
All right, thank you.
Next up, let's go to Sean in Ohio. You're up with us. Hey, Sean, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
All righty.
Hey, first of all, I want to say thanks for the books I got from you guys. I actually had to wait a little while back. But anyhow, I was called, because me and a buddy of mine, after reading one of those books, the one about the star map and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, we got to thinking, you know, that just put my mind a little further ahead, and I'm like, okay, Big Bang. What came from the Big Bang? What was before it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to put that question to, you know, you and the rest of the Coast listeners. I mean, I can't figure it out. If there is a beginning, how did it begin and what did it come from, you know?
There's no answer to it, Sean. You'll go nuts trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I almost did. But, I mean, you know, I just figured I'd see if anybody else had any more thoughts on it, because I pretty much just stumped myself trying to figure it out.
You know, I talked to physicists. I just talked to Michio Kaku just a week and a half ago. I have a very difficult time trying to comprehend the Big Bang Theory. I just don't understand how this very minute little particle of matter exploded and we have everything we can see physically. I just don't understand it.
Hey, where did that little particle come from, you know? That's my thing.
Yep. And what was it before?
Exactly. Well, thanks.
Okay. Now you're going to make me go nuts, Sean, trying to think of this. Florida, we go east of the Rockies. William, it's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Good morning, George.
Hey.
Keep the light on, George, because you're the only one in the media that's reporting anything that's halfway true around these parts of these days. The pandemic, supposed pandemic that just happened, I wanted to get you idea on this, and you think this was a dry run for to see the reaction of the people in this country for eventual
the big one,
martial law, and then them taking you know, you want to get the guns out of the people's hands, get rid of habeas corpus, declare martial law, and then you have no choice but to give them up.
It could be. I was talking with Dr. Mark Siegel last week about this, and we're both baffled at how organized worldwide this whole thing has been. I mean, it is like clockwork. They haven't missed a beat with this.
Exactly.
I mean, we look at just what happened when the hurricane went through, Katrina went through New Orleans. What a disaster.
Right.
I mean, that was in one city.
Exactly.
I mean, this has been a organized worldwide event. They're structured. The laboratories seem ready to check people out. I mean, it's just weird.
It is weird. We had, like, down here in Florida, we had, right now, we had two cases down here in the county below us. They've closed schools. You know, we get the flu, and this flu influenza all the time, and the schools don't close. And it just seems as though this is an organized dry run for the government to see how they can proceed. And nobody's saying anything. Nobody's just, you know, I call the people in this country sheeple. You know, not people, sheeple, because they just follow along blindly. And as whatever they're told to do, they do. And it's just so obvious to me that this is a very organized, and I agree with you, worldwide pre-run.
It's, you know, they're now saying there's 1,000 cases worldwide. All right, we've got 6.5 billion people on this planet. You know, I'm going to just guess at this figure, but I bet we've got 50,000 people whose noses are bleeding right now as I speak.
That's
a pandemic.
Yeah, and where's the $1.5 billion that was quietly authorized for this that Obama asked for through from Congress and got? Where did that go to?
I know it. Somebody's making money at something. But in terms of, is this a dry run? Can they see how it works? That's very possible.
Yeah, it's very scary.
I haven't talked to one doctor who said this was going to be a big outbreak. They've all said it's nothing, no big deal.
Well, my doctors told, when I went to see you last week, told me that it's caused them a lot of heartache because of people panicking, especially older people coming in. And there is no shot for this. There is nothing, you know, it's, you have to run a course. But it's panicking.
Do you know one of the reasons why our economy is in the shape it is? Because people have panicked and they're not spending their money that they normally would spend.
Right.
And so they hold back. You know, as I was telling the conference in San Diego yesterday, this economy in our country runs on people buying things. If they don't buy things, the whole thing collapses.
You're right.
It's amazing.
All right.
But you're very perceptive, William.
Keep the light on.
Always. Always.
We appreciate it.
West of the Rockies. Let's go to Richard in Hawaii. Hey, Richard.
Hey. I was on with when Linda Moulton Howe was on last weekend.
Okay.
I had a question for both of you, and I found the answer to my question. It was about New World traces of drugs found in Old World.
Oh, mummies. Yeah, you called about the tobacco and the cocaine in mummies. Right.
Right. And they were actually discovered in Pharaoh Ramses the Great.
Which tells me they had some kind of link with North America.
Exactly. And they did test twice on these mummies, and they it checks out. They were not able to disprove that this stuff actually occurred.
I don't think Columbus was the first to discover the Americas.
No, I don't think so either. And I had one other question. If you ever had heard of William Childs, Fela Childs?
Yes.
Oh, you have. Have you ever had him as a guest on your show?
Yes, I think it's Childers.
Oh, okay. That's how you pronounce it.
Pretty sure. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's all. I just wanted to reaffirm that. And
how are things doing in Hawaii, by the way?
A lot of fog in the air, which is a mixture of volcanic gas and smog. So that's why I'm having trouble.
And Kilauea is still doing its thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been doing it for a good year now.
Just won't stop.
Yeah. No, but...
You got to have a huge cork and just lower it right into the middle of a volcano.
Well, you know, it'd be a good way to generate energy, you know.
Boy, if it ever popped, it'd be like a huge champagne bottle, wouldn't it? All right, Richard, thanks.
Well, thanks. Bye-bye.
Next up, let's go to Tom in Chicago. You're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom.
Hi, George. I prefer to listen to you. I've been listening to you a long time, like a curious sponge soaking up.
Well, thank you.
You know, all the information and facts and all the topics you cover. I was just wondering, your first guest, your first caller, Open Lines, was talking about UFO, mental hospital. I was just wondering, it seems like I meet people that have a lot of information and different things to talk about that have come out of mental hospitals. But it still seems to me that these people end up getting sucked into these hospitals and come out like they're zombies or something at first. Like these hospitals are doing something to people where they're, you know, their minds.
They drug them to death, practically.
Yeah, that's my point. What's going on with that? I mean, is that the course of treatment nowadays? Just to shut somebody up or calm them down into a state where they're no longer a threat to anybody.
You lock them up, you give them pills, and you keep medicating them, and off they go.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad situation. I don't know. I can't remember. Have you ever had any guests on that address that issue? Or?
No, we haven't really touched that topic yet. I might look into that.
Okay, it's a pleasure talking to you, George.
All right,
good night, then.
You too. Bye. Next up, let's go to Foster in Florida. You are in Coast to Coast. Hey, Foster.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay.
All right. Love your show.
Thank you.
You know, you have shows on about the New World Order and Illuminati.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and I love your roundtable discussions with you guys. So, I was wondering, do you think that you are on their radar? You know, like do you think that they know about you and they hear?
Oh yeah.
You know, listening.
I think they know about me. I definitely know that they listen. And, you know, to probably answer your next question, how come they continue to let me do what I do? I think it would probably bring more attention to them if they tried to stop.
Right. have you ever been contacted by any of them, or would you know? You know what I mean?
You know, not that I know of. I mean, I get lots of phone calls on my my company voicemail and stuff, but I mean, never have I gotten a call from someone who said, you know, I'm the Illuminati and here's my phone number and call me.
Right.
That doesn't happen that way.
You know, and with this swine flu outbreak, I just think that I think it's a test just to release something even worse. You know, than that. That's what I believe.
They want, and they're probably checking how fast can they respond? What, what's the public reaction? Does the media, this is a big test for the media. Will the media grab this kind of a story and run with it? And most of them did. I'm very disappointed that the way they handled it.
Yeah, exactly. And the bad part about it are the dead scientists, you know, the over 80 of them.
Yep.
Or so.
The biotechnology scientists.
Right.
History.
Right. It's incredible, you know. But I love your show. I'll continue to listen.
All right, my friend.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, the media, mainstream, jumped on this story, and not one in the beginning talked about how this wasn't as big as everybody thought. They just all got involved in the hoopla of this thing, and it was disappointing. And, you know, we're very perceptive on this program. You are, I am, that's the nature of who we are. And you just feel these things. You just know these things. And you know what? We did. And look what happened. Rest of the week, as I mentioned, Dr. John Lermer joins us on our Monday night show as we talk about pre-death experiences. And he's also the one who attempted to remove an implant from Whitley Strieber. Special guest coming up on Tuesday. I'll keep you in the dark on that. Wednesday, Robert Zimmerman talks with us about all things in space, including the Hubble Space Telescope, the telescope that just seems to keep going and going and going. Eldon Taylor joins us with Mind Programming on Thursday, and then we're back to more open lines on Friday right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hope you enjoyed your Sunday night into Monday morning. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. If you own weapons, go buy your ammunition, but just don't hoard it. Make sure everybody has enough to share. For Jesse Angelo, Dave Caprita, Jason King, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.